Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Blog Talk Radio Syndicated News. As usual, we're joining someone very interesting this evening, and we still want to take a minute to thank Shadow Ops from San Jose, California, for supporting our studio efforts. A very, very discreet company, very serious, very professional, and if you need network engineering, the place to go is Shadow Ops in San Jose, California. This evening we'll be joined by Manny Alfaro from OLA. That's the Hispanic Organization of Latin Actors in New York City. It's a U.S.-based Hispanic population. Well, basically it's growing in leaps and bounds. Everyone knows that. And now it's being reflected in the entertainment industry. So we're going to talk about their fund drive and their awards. Those are very, very popular this year and extremely exciting and interesting for people in media and those that aren't. And we see our Latin actors receiving credit for the work that they've done and getting them in the right direction so that they can continue in media. Tomorrow night we're going to be joined by Drs. Stratman and Stratman. That's Dr. Henry Stratman and his wife, Dr. Mary Ellen Stratman. This is a couple. They're both MDs, and they're going to talk about our cardiac situations and our sex life as we age a little. The following night, the 14th, August 14th at 9, we'll be joined by Stephen Ferry of the International Institute of Modern Butlers. If there's anything you want to know about hiring a butler, training a butler, routing a butler, or basically establishing a butler's services or schedules, you've got to tune in on August 14th. Stephen Ferry is going to give us all that information. On August 19th, we'll be joined by Gail Goldberg. She's a licensed master's social worker. She's going to talk about supervised visitation. We've gotten a lot of feedback and requests asking for the night she's going to be speaking. That will be August 19th. At 9. On August 20th, we'll be joined by a group from Acronis. It's going to be a very interesting evening for anyone who operates a computer in business or at home. Acronis makes a software that protects your backups and protects all of your business records. If you have a business or if you even have a home, just a home computer, you've got to be here for that Acronis discussion because they're going to explain why it's so necessary to protect your work and all the possible things that could go wrong that you don't expect. And they just happen out of the blue. You have to have good software to protect your backups, and you have to have a good software that you don't have to be replacing constantly. Acronis will do that. In fact, they call it the Greek god of backup. On August 26th at 9 p.m., we're going to have Michael Johns. He's the Republican strategist and a former U.S. federal government official. He was a White House speechwriter and a Heritage Foundation policy analyst. He's going to join us that evening, and he's going to talk about best practices that encourage global trade with China. On August 27th, we'll be joined by Michael Landers. We'll be talking about Culture Crossings. That's an organization dedicated to finding great ways and solutions for groups and individual folk to deal with challenging cultural situations when they travel overseas. That's going to be a very interesting evening. On August 28th, we're going to be joined by Doug Turner. He's the Millionaire's Concierge. And what we placed up on the website was from the sublime to the extraordinary. If you have the dollars and a dream, Doug Turner will and can make it happen. From flying a fighter jet to renting a yacht or a mansion or even a $23 million joyride on the space shuttle, he can make that happen. Then on September 4th, we're going to be joined by Ellen Baumritter. Ellen Baumritter has put together a journal that helps organize a person's life for the next generation so that you're prepared should that inevitable future incident happen. We all eventually cease, and we want to have all of our important documents together. Now we're joined by Manny Alfaro from OLA. Good evening, Manny.
Good evening.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio Syndicated News.
Well, thank you for having me on your show this evening.
Oh, it's a pleasure. We've been going through the database and looking at all those beautiful men and women and children. We found children in the database. It was wonderful. Hispanic actors, they registered with AFTRA and SAG. We were very impressed.
And equity. Don't forget equity now.
Oh, I saw that equity there as well, yes. So
well, they're
us
all professionals and want to be more professional.
Yeah.
That's why they associate themselves with our organization.
I've seen them on CSI. I've seen some of them on Law & Order. I've seen some of them on comedy shows as well.
Yeah, Law & Order gets a good chunk of our talent since, you know, they had at one time, I think, 4 shows shooting in New York City. I think they're down now to 2, 1 regular show. And a new one is about to begin to shoot in the fall.
So, Manny, how did OLA begin? Who started it?
Well, and that's a story that I've had different versions. They all coincide in the basic facts. But the founding member of OLA, her name was Ilka Tania Payan. She, actress, lawyer, and a public servant in many respects, who organized the actors in the early 70s to actually go to her home or apartment and different other places and start to commiserate about the state of the theater and Latinos and the lack of meaningful work, and whatever work was offered to them was usually negative stereotype roles, which are fine because they do pay money and they sustain people in the business. But that was the limit. Either you were a maid or a servant or a butler. Well, no, not butlers. The butlers have English accents. Spanish people don't.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a problem. The limits of work were not enough to keep, or the maxims or whatever ability you have to get work in the city was not enough to keep a viable pool of talent in the city of New York. For crying out loud, New York is a theater town. Has thousands of actors, and they couldn't sustain Latino actors. They would move to Miami, they would try to go to Los Angeles because there wasn't enough work in New York. But something happened in 1975.
What happened?
3 theater companies started planting roots in the city of New York who catered to Spanish language productions. The
mm-hmm.
main one was the Spanish Repertorio, otherwise known amongst ourselves, Repertorio Español. It was started by Cuban emigres who had theater and who were running theater in Havana and came to the States and said and decided to create a theater group of Spanish repertory product and also new works. And they got a hold of a theater on East 27th Street off Lexington Avenue, which is not a bad address. It was a converted brownstone building. And the whole bottom 2 floors were opened up into a theater. Actually, it was an established theater, small theater, prior to that. And they took over the lease and created a theater company of repertory players. And they've been well-funded and quite successful since 1975 and 1976. In the Bronx, Pregones was a Puerto Rican theater company that got started, that only dedicated itself to works by Puerto Rican authors. And they're still in operation, still running, and I haven't seen anything there that I did not like. And I'm not saying because they're friends of mine or because I'm associated with them any which way. It's because the quality of the work deserves praise. Then Miriam Colon, I don't know if you remember her. She's still an actress and still works. She was a starlet in Hollywood in the 50s and did many television shows, westerns. She starred opposite Marlon Brando in one of his westerns, I think one that he directed himself. Opened up the Puerto Rican Traveling Theater, and it was meant to produce works, not so much of Puerto Ricans, but Latin works of all types. But her productions offered the play a version in Spanish and then an English version, and they'd run three times a week, one Spanish, one English, on and off, on and off. That was her thing, and she's still operating and still doing rather well. That was the beginning of the real theater movement in New York City, though there was theater prior in the 50s and the 60s, but not quite a legitimate type of theater. Then something else happened. In 1976, I could be wrong, or 75, Screen Actors Guild and the American Federation of Television Radio Artists negotiated a contract for commercial work with the Spanish International Work with CIN. And they took over the operation of the broadcasting of the production of Spanish commercials and organized all the actors into the union. And since then, they've been producing and airing, for the most part, union work. This also gave the shot in the arm for a viable talent pool in New York to stay in New York, because there's always a possibility of getting work. And the most remunerative, of course, is commercial work and voiceover work, especially in radio, because you can work via various products and not be identified with a product. And if you're good and you know what you're doing, you can make a nice living and be comfortable and support a family. I don't know about paying today's rents, but at that time, certainly, he was
I'm looking at Ms. Colon's work. I can't believe she's done over 100 movies. We ran out of space here.
Oh, yes. She's
the
quite a good
Cry, actor. Gold 2, Johnny Zero, Who's Your Daddy, Pilot, The Guiding Light, the Blue Diner, Third Watch, Almost a Woman, All the Pretty Horses. I'm going to stop at 10.
You should see
the
Blue Diner. The
list goes on over 100.
Yeah, The Blue Diner is a fairly recent production, and it's an excellent movie shot in Boston. And she plays a cantankerous mom, and she's so good at being cantankerous that you'd believe that she was cantankerous. In reality, she's a sweetheart of a lady. And it's a good movie. It's a lovely movie. It's an all-Latino cast. One or two Anglos throw in for salt and pepper.
That's beautifully said. Beautifully put. Now, right now, at this moment, what services are available at Hola?
Primarily, we have our directory, the Hispanic, the Hola pages. That's Hispanic Organization of Latin Actors, and we just had fun looking for a name, and we called it the Hola pages, a ripoff of the Yellow Pages, of course. But it worked, and it's an outgrowth of our published directory. Since 1980, we have been producing every 2 years a directory of Hispanic talent and distributing it to the industry, to casting directors and agents, free of charge, no fees. The fees were paid and borne by the members, and fortunately, we have been funded in part about 25 or 30 cents on the dollar by the New York State Council on the Arts, and to a lesser extent, the City of New York Department of Cultural Affairs. So they subsidize our fees, and in order to get as many actors who are trying to afford a career in this business to stay with us.
And for an actor wanting to join, Manny, an actor wanting to join Hola, is it an affordable fee? I'm looking on the website. I can't see it.
No, we don't publish the fees because...
Okay, no problem.
Though there is an application form that you download and it has the fees there. It's $125 a year.
Very reasonable.
I'm glad you think so. A lot about when we adjusted our fees downward to $125, because the membership fee was separated from the directory fee. And when you put them together, it was over $140. And if you wanted to advertise yourself as a voiceover actor, it was another $15. And we had to charge those fees. They seem high to a certain extent, but it's the only way to survive and maintain the organization. You have to have a fee structure that's commensurate with the services that you do provide. But it's $125 a year. You get the directory. Unlimited changes in pictures, unlimited changes in credits. The actor has an opportunity to enter into the website himself and change his credits, adjust whatever cover note, whatever he wants to do. The only
they can add to their work all the time as they
all the time on a continuous basis. On a continuous
and pilots basis. And such, they can keep adding.
Yes. Yeah. And
that's excellent.
No other service to the for-profit services charge you a bite every time you go in there and ask for a change. We don't. It's unlimited changes. The only thing that we maintain a structure is that an actor changes his contact number. We'd rather have him tell us so then we make the change and at the same time memorialize it in our system. And
sure.
Also the photographs. Some actors have no idea what kind of or size of photograph to uplink. You'll end up with a huge poster instead of a 1-by-2-inch picture. So we take the picture. No, on the internet, that's the way it is.
Sure.
We make the adjustment and drop it in, and that's the only thing that we control. Otherwise, it's in the actor's hands. And we get on the average, for a small organization that we are, we pretend to be much bigger than we are, but we're small. We get over 10,000 hits an hour directly webpage a month. And that's not bad. For New York, for our casting directors and people looking for actors, it's not
bad. That's excellent.
Our main page, our main front page, it's a slower count because that's when people visit the first page. But once they know where our directory is, they put that in their favorites and they go right to it, bypass our main counter. But I get in there, I go up on the website, and I check to see what's going on, what the activity is. It's the only way to know if you're still alive.
And Manny, I wanted to ask you, what is the advocacy component? What is that?
Well, we try to tell the industry, look, you want to hire an actor, a Latino actor, offer him a meaningful job, something that is representative of him and his dignity. We cannot tell a director or a writer what to do. That's artistic control. But we want the opportunity to be available for other roles other than the maid or the fellow that gets arrested because he looked a little skeevy in the street by a police officer. Law and Order does enough of that, gives our people lots of work, and they always have – it's not a two-dimensional actor or character. They add a third dimension so he becomes human even though he's been arrested and has the cuffs on him. But still, the predominant area that we work in are generally the small town crook, unfortunately. You can watch and get an idea of what we play. But that's all right because that represents the population as it is and what happens to Latinos in this world. We're coming up in the world. What is it? We're going to be 20% of the population? Isn't that great? It's lovely. But we also
my favorite word, lovely.
we also want to be able to play other roles, and it's happening. I'm mainly thinking of the past. Today it's changed quite a bit. There are lots of other roles. Law and Order, for the fact, they've had Latino leads as the detectives and Latino judges. Which is great, which then gives the impression to people who are watching out there in Peoria, I hope Peoria is not upset with this, that Latinos are not necessarily the stereotype. We're not that exotic. We're like you, plain people.
Regular, everyday human beings.
Yes, but we fervently believe, that by having a large pool of talent available, those that are in the creative end, the ones that write plays, or produce theater, that produce film, even commercial work. Wait a minute. I know where I can get my hands on lots of Latinos. Why not write this character as a Latino? That's all we ask. That's all we ask. We figure by having a pool of talent there, it's there. But on the advocacy side,
yes,
Ola made its name in the industry as an organization that you can deal with. In one incident that happened back in 1993, I think, or 92, 93.
It was, tell us about it.
Well, it was a play called Death and the Maiden. It was a move over from the London stage it's a three-character study, about three Chileans it's about Chile, but we all knew, they didn't say it was from Chile. They were South Americans from a ruling class South Americans who had just survived the terrible death and murder and mayhem that was happening either in Chile and Argentina. As you know, the killings of young people just because they had a left bent in their politics or suspected thereof of being leftists were being killed by the government at that time. And this
Is that with Sigourney Weaver?
Yes, that was a film with Sigourney Weaver. It became a film.
Oh, and Ben Kingsley, I remember, in that great classical music.
Oh, yes. Mm. Well, that was Schumann. I think it was had to do with Death and the Maiden, the music in itself.
Yes,
but
yes.
What happened is that an announcement came in backstage that Richard Dreyfuss and Gene Hackman had agreed to do a new play by Ariel Dorfman, a Chilean author, a play about the politics and the hassles that were going on in Chile at that time.
Yes.
And they were going to bring over an English actress who was on the English stage who originated the role. And we were a little perturbed when it was brought to our attention. If they were willing to hire an unknown to put her on the Broadway stage, why not look for a Latina unknown, for crying out loud? We were very upset. We wrote a letter to backstage, and we started waves, and eventually Equity picked up the controversy. And at that time, there were more English plays on the American stage than there were Americans or American plays on the English stage. So the agreement they had with Equity and exchange of talent was off balance, and they told the producers that they could not bring this actress in. So it happens, I don't know if you know her name, Isabel Stevenson. She's a wonderful actress, and I'm glad that she was able to make it beyond that incident. She's very good as an actress. But Equity asked them to recast that role, and the inference was that they should look for a Latina to do the role. But as it would happen, Glenn Close had expressed interest in playing the role. Now, the star system you can't find in a Broadway stage, you cannot find, especially when there are only three characters, for crying out loud. Three of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't even get a maid in there that was Latina to get on Latina's work. And they went into rehearsals. We felt a little miffed, but at least Ariel Dorfman, a Chilean, Hispanic in the sense that the culture is Hispanic, though his extraction may not be with the last name. At least out of the three characters, a fourth name was Latin. They had a play written by a Hispanic author, if you accept Ariel Dorfman being Hispanic. He's a nice man, by the way. I had nice conversations with him. He's very, very good at what he does. But notice I'm a very good politician. So, So what happened is that it happened that Glenn Close had a certain agreement. She could not do all the performances. And her understudy would have to go in for her. So that's when we became very excited. Who's the understudy? And serendipity, luck has played in our favor. Let me find the right words. Luck played in our favor, and the understudy was with child and could not be able to go on. And they hired a Latina actress who understudied and was able to go on for many performances of Death and the Maiden while I was on Broadway. And it had a good box office, by the way. But we became known as a reasonable organization. We were not going to picket the theater. We were not going to picket the play. We certainly would not want to picket our own actors. Though we did appear on the night, opening night, and kind of walked around with great interest. But we had no signs. We had no signs. We didn't threaten the box office. And
you went to observe.
Yes, interested observers. But the reputation, Orla's reputation was greatly enhanced because we were reasonable. We could be talked to. And if they convinced us, we then convinced our own members and actors, Latino actors, that their welfare was looked after. So that was our big deal with regard to advocacy in New York in the early 90s.
That's very strong advocacy.
Yes. By the way, there were two other Broadway plays that had no Latinos in the cast that a previous president of OLA did pick it. It was Goodbye Fidel. Needless to say, you know, it's about a play about the ruling class in Cuba as they were leaving Cuba because of the hassles with Fidel. And they didn't have any Latinos in the major roles. They did have a couple of Gardner I can't think of the word, person who serves you. doesn't matter. As Latino
servant,
actor.
A butler?
No, not a butler. They have the English accent, you know that. No, maid.
A maid, okay.
Yes, a maid. And they were Latino actors. And that was kind of, you know, well, it's an attitude. There weren't any Latino actors available to hire, at least in one of the roles. But anyway, they all went on with phony Spanish accents, and it didn't work. The critics didn't like it. And that was that. We won by default. And
that's wonderful.
I have a West Highland Terrier, if you don't mind. And
we have a coonhound in this location, and it's very vocal, so don't worry about it.
Max, shh. Okay, now where can we go from here?
I remember seeing when Sidney Pollack chose, there was Robert Redford and Olin, and I was so disappointed because I couldn't pick out any Latin actors in that movie. Do you remember Robert Redford's Havana?
I remember seeing it a long time ago. I have a very small memory of it at this point.
I don't remember Latin actors in the movie. I think it was directed by Sidney Pollack.
Well,
it was Robert Redford's Havana. It was called Havana, I think, or Cuba. I don't remember it. But anyway, it was Olin, and I was thinking, what a pity that there wasn't anyone else. There wasn't a Hispanic actress that could have played that role. She played the Latin lead, the female lead.
I can't think of her right now. I have no. I see some movies and some others I don't want to see because I know I'm going to be disappointed. I'm one of those. I read the reviews. I wait till they come on television, then I watch. Well, let me see. What can we talk about? Oh yes.
It was. Yes, go ahead.
The awards programming that we've had.
What's going on with that? Is that all? Tell us about that. We know nothing about that. We don't know the details.
Okay. It is. We had an awards programming or awards program back in the 70s and the 80s, and they were canceled owing to the cost and the effort to produce them, and they were never really designed as a benefit. They were designed more as recognizing those actors. We had our members would vote for their best friends, or our members would vote for their actors who they thought were best in a program, and they send it in, and then the awardees were announced on the evening. And it worked for a while, but it was cumbersome. It was awfully expensive to produce without any real income coming in there. So they were canceled. But back in 1990, we started again. And we started an award program, and it turned out to be quite successful for us in the sense that the interest maintained the income, the purchase of tickets. We kept our head above water, and we never really lost any money, which to me is very important. That first year, we brought in Leoni Chasso, the Cuban director, who has had some success recently with Benjamin Bratt in the film about the Puerto Rican individual that was in jail because he was a drug addict, and it was also.
Is that the new show on television?
No, it's not the new show, but it certainly is a character he played in this particular film. But
that's
no, it's
where
not.
It comes from. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm sure. I imagine. We even brought in Sarita Montiel from Spain, and she's a real character. Rosie Perez. These are the people that we brought into the Players. This is the organization or the theater group that we present the awards. Priscilla Lopez, the Broadway starlet, has a long career, nice long career. She was the Latina in Chorus Line, the first cast. Mm-hmm. Then we have the wonderful Argentine director, Graciela Daniel. They all came to our events and accepted awards and a nod from us. Nilo Cruz, the playwright, and everybody's favorite, Antonio Banderas. Oh, boy, was he exciting. Huge crowd. They're all there clapping and having great fun. We'd have Alfred Molina, the wonderful English actor of the Spanish heritage, Daphne Rubin Vega, and the Mexican director, film director, Alfonso Cuarón, Broadway actor, Raúl Esparza, movie actor, Isai Morales, and Mercedes Rule. It's Maria Hinojosa, the news lady on Channel 13.
That absolutely.
WNET. And mm-hmm. and one of my favorites, singer Danny Rivera from Puerto Rico. He is really a wonderful, wonderful singer. He's just terrific. If you link on our webpage, you go down where the new media, you click in on I think it's the bottom of the page. He sings a song there, and it's just wonderful. He's a wonderful singer. Nice man. Soledad O'Brien from CNN.
Mm-hmm.
And theater director Moises Kaufman. And Lin-Manuel Miranda. He's just won an Emmy, not an Emmy, for Broadway, the Broadway Award. I can't think of it. Tony Award winner. Lin-Manuel Miranda, and we got a hold of him before he won his Tony Award, and we recognized him.
Excellent. So you had an opportunity to give him a good understanding that he's appreciated.
Well, it's if you don't recognize, if we, the people who are of your own kind, don't recognize you for what you're doing, we'll stay in the background in the minds of everyone else. We must maintain them at a level of honor and respect, and otherwise, what's the point of being an actor? What's the point of being an artist? You need a little bit of that ego massage, especially if you get it from your own peers. It's even better.
Oh, it makes all the difference in the world. Absolutely. And I want these awards programs. Are you going to give us an idea as to who's in the lineup for these awards?
I hope so. I have it right down here on a piece of paper.
Tell us very slowly because people are going to want to take notes.
Okay, this year we are honoring on September the 15th at the Players, John Ortiz. He's getting the Olaf Ferrer Tespes Award, the Jose Ferrer Tespes Award. Talia, this is the Mexican entertainer. She's getting the Ola Ilka Award. That is named after our founding president, Ilka Tania Payan.
Mm-hmm.
Eduardo Machado, he is getting the Raul Julia Ola Founders Award. He's the playwright, the Cuban playwright, who's had some success on Broadway and in regional theater.
Mm-hmm.
Mario Bosques, he's the newsman on television newsman. He's getting the Ola Excellence in Media Award. And one of our very own longtime actor within the Spanish theater movement, Ricardo Barber, he's getting the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Okay.
Then we have a series of actors who've been working the Spanish theater movement for the last season, and there are about 35 of them who'll be getting these awards. And if I go down the line here, it's going to bore everyone to death with all these names. They don't know who they are. But it's we give awards out for outstanding performance by a female and male actor, by a featured male actor and a featured female actor, best direction, best outstanding solo performance.
But now, Manny, how many awards are you going to give? How many awards are they going to release
night? We have the major awards, the ones I mentioned to you. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 major awards. And then we have about 40 individual awards that we give out in groups of those actors that appear in a play, in a series of plays or cast, and they come up and accept the award. They do a quick thank you because we don't want to keep everybody going. And that's it.
Oh, Manny, we've got time. Let's give them honorable mention. It's going to take a matter of minutes to list them. Just give us the names. It's only fair. They want to hear themselves.
Certainly.
Let's have those names.
Ernesto de Villa Bejani, Francisco Fuertes, Jack Landron, Ed Trucco, T-R-U-C-C-O,
mm-hmm.
Olga Agostini, Angelica Ayala, Jennifer Diaz, Soledad Lopez, Pedro Capó, Gabriel Cortés, Pablo Tufino, Fred Valle, Annette Cortez, Dalia Davi, Jezebel Montero, Elka Rodriguez, and now this is a large group of actors, it's a single play, Anthony Alvarez, Rosie Berrido, Francisco Gatorno, Laura Gomez, Selenis Leiva, Indio Melendez, Alberto Morgan, Puy Navarro, Denise Quiñones, Pedro Cerca, Silvia Sierra, Gredivel Vázquez, Tatiana Vecino, I'm trying to lower my phone here.
Don't
Mimi
worry about
Lasso,
the phone, Manny. Keep reading. We want to know the names.
Carmen Palaez,
uh-huh.
Jose A. Lopez, Luis Salgado, Robert Weber Federico, Alberto Morgan, Carlos La Cámara, Tere Martínez, Carmen Rivera, Cándido Tirado, Ángel Gil Orrios, Manuel Amorán, Jorge Ali Triana, and then we have the plays that have been honored, The Monstruos y Prodigios, La Historia de los Castrati, interesting title,
mm-hmm.
Divinas Palabras, Lo que ríen los últimos. Then we have another series of plays, Outstanding Achievement in Dramatic Production, Cena para Dos, Doña Flor y sus dos maridos, En ningún lugar de la frontera, Celia, The Life and Music of Celia Cruz, La Muela del Rey Farfán, Picasso, Flamenco Conde de Orgaz, Picasso, and we have a special recognition of Xiomara Laugart for her performance in Celia, The Life and Music of Celia Cruz. That's a lot.
that's lovely. And I mean, they deserve the award. They certainly deserve to have their name mentioned.
This has been an outstanding year. It was very difficult to pick from one actor or from one group or another. And we generally have two in each category. This year we've had three in certain categories because it'd be unfair not to pick on one and leave the other one out of the listing. It's a very difficult process of picking. There are a lot of productions and a lot of people that were not chosen, but they'll be around next year, and hopefully they will be viable candidates for our next event.
I'm waiting for that. I can't wait for that. That's going to be – where's it going to be held, by the way?
At the Players at 16 Gramercy Park South. That's in New York City at 20th Street. The event starts at 6:30. We have a tapas, hot tapas, and a reception. And then at 8 o'clock, we start with the performance, and we're out of there by 10:30.
Is there, are there tickets?
Tickets
available?
Yes. You can get...
How can they buy tickets? Can they buy them from Ola?
Yes, they can buy them online if they wish.
At your website?
Yes.
Okay, let's give that website address.
Okay,
let's have
that. Hello in English and hello in Spanish.org, and I will say it. Hello, hola. I'm pronouncing the H so people know that the hello in Spanish has an H. helloola.org.
Excellent. That's www.helloola.org?
.org. You've got it, yes.
Okay, excellent. And they can get tickets for this event?
Yeah, they
right
order
on
online
website.
And then I mail them the tickets. They get a
excellent.
Receipt. They get a response, and that's where we are. We have plans for the future, hopefully.
Tell us.
At the same time we got started.
Yes, we want to know about
it. At the same time
this.
We got started, because this all happened
yeah.
in the middle 70s. Nosotros mm-hmm. is a sister organization out of Los Angeles. Started a group similar to ours, and it was founded by Ricardo Montalban.
Mm-hmm.
In New York, by the way, I didn't mention these names. We were helped along at the very beginning, at the beginning of the broadcast,
yes.
by Jose Ferrer, and actor Jose Ferrer, and Raul Julia. In fact, Raul Julia shelled out some cash so we can rent an office and buy a computer and have a phone line to have stamps and do a mailing and get people to join the organization, which was wonderful of him. He was such a help for us at the beginning. And Jose Ferrer lent his name and gave us a little notoriety in the papers, so we were noticed by the industry at that time. Now, going back to at the same time, Nosotros, which in Spanish means we, us, actually,
mm-hmm.
Got started in a similar fashion out of in Los Angeles, Hollywood. And Ricardo Montalban out there was instrumental in lending his name and some of his treasure to get the organization started. And they
mm-hmm.
also produced a directory and had services. But they're a little more into the production, and they produce large events, and they get together people. They don't have a directory going anymore. They had one for a while, but they stopped doing that. So we want to fill some of that gap and get as many actors out in Los Angeles to appear in our directory, because people are looking at it, and it is not that expensive to get into the directory, and
mm-hmm.
it will help them eventually with as many hits that we're getting. And when people get to know the fact that we have more people from the West Coast and from Chicago and hopefully from Miami, Florida, they'll be able to get work through our website, which is important.
It's absolutely important. Now, are you going to expand outside of New York? Are you headed in that direction?
Well, it's been in the talking stages. But to expand, it means having some sort of control over our branches, if we ever get those branches. And the way we're set up at this point, it doesn't look like it's going to happen any time soon. But we want to expand the reach of the organization out of New York and our directory, so to be more inclusive, more of a national directory than mainly in New York metropolitan area directory. That's where the expansion is possible. Because we could not, you have to hire someone, open an office in Los Angeles or Miami, and in Miami, and that is very expensive. You have to get some nice funding on the part of some generous corporate entities and foundations to be able to do that. I'd be willing to talk to any corporate entity or foundation that is willing to help us try that out. I will do it.
And
but otherwise,
anyone listening, this is Blog Talk Radio, Syndicated News, and we're talking to Manny Alfaro, the executive director of HOLA, the Hispanic Organization of Latin Actors. Their website again is www.helloola.org. That's www.helloola.org. HelloHola.org. And their phone number in New York City is 212-253-1015. The Hispanic Organization of Latin Actors is located at 107 Suffolk Street, Suite 302, New York, New York, 10002.
That was very nicely said.
I wanted to ask you, California, is HOLA moving and expanding to California? Because I hear rumors.
Oh, I haven't heard those rumors. What we're expanding is, again, I'll repeat myself, we want to expand the directory to reach actors out in Los Angeles. And that's a very large community of players out there, and we would love to have them contact us and join our directory and put themselves up, because if you want an actor from the West Coast, all you have to do is to click on the directory. It'll give you those actors who are registered with us who live out in the West Coast. We have a few. We don't have that many. But going out there, it's a big political move.
Are you saying there are more Hispanic actors in New York City than there are in Los Angeles? Or in Hollywood?
I don't know. I couldn't give you that number. I think what we're getting in New York is a new wave of immigrants from Central and South America. Not quite the same in Los Angeles. In Los Angeles, it tends to be more of the Mexican and some of Central America. But in New York, we're getting it from Europe. We're getting it from Brazil. We're getting it from Spain. And they're joining the organization. They're being part of our organization. So the cross-section of Latinos, use that expression. The cross section is a little more diverse in New York than I imagine in Los Angeles. So that also presents problems. Casting directors out over there tend to think of Latins as being more of the Mexican extraction, while casting directors in New York tend to think that we're more Caribbean. So there's a difference in perception. And we're about to change that. We're very varied in New York. We want to let them know that our Latins have a similar cross section racially and ethnically than as the immigrants that came to New York in the early part of the century. You go to Brazil, they're not all Portuguese. They're German. They're Middle European. Same thing with Argentina. Uruguay has the same thing. Has French and has Middle Europeans. And Argentina has, of course, German and Italian, heavy extraction of that, along with the Spanish. And they're the ones that are emigrating to the States and want to perform and become actors in New York and make their name and become successful in New York. Eventually, some of them will want to go to Los Angeles, Hollywood. That's a big draw. It's a big attraction. But that's a huge move for any actor. He has to spend a lot of time out there establishing himself, finding an agent, and hopefully the agent likes them and will then represent them. In New York, an actor can freelance. He can work with several agencies as long as he's not accepting the same work from both agents.
And I'm noticing that you have a lot of young people, very, very young people. I even saw children in that database. That was wonderful.
Yeah. Those that happen to be sons and daughters and nieces of our members. We don't accept a separate entry. We must know that the person who's giving us the entry for a child happens to be related to one of our members, who will then be responsible, because it is a free and open access directory, a web page, and you're dealing with children, you have to be extremely careful.
I'm assuming when those phone numbers are up there, those numbers are not going to the child. They're going directly to an adult.
Of course. So we control that by saying, all right, you must become a member also and appear in the directory. And the surname usually puts them together. And when they see the same number, anyone with less than honorable intentions will immediately bypass that child and call someone else if they want to. And they'll find the same problem with anyone else in our system.
You're going to have to be dealing with an adult when you want to approach any child found on that database.
All the time. If there's an agent involved, that's even better. But our bylaws prohibit us from accepting any minor as a member of the organization. But it does not prohibit us from accepting a minor to appear in the directory as long as it's a child of a member.
Excellent. And I wanted to ask you, the preparation, can a young actor who wants to move into movies or possibly do work on television in New York City, because there's so much of it, I mean, when you go two blocks, there's something else being screened and you got to go around the corner because they've cut off the street, and the filming in New York City is constant, day and night. Can a young person go to OLA and get training and get their come in and get a little polishing up and learn how to act a bit?
We have workshops for the professional actor or the trained actor. The totally green person coming in for the first time, we offer no training, because that is a long-term commitment on the part of the actor. And it's very difficult with young kids and youngsters to get that kind of a commitment. They must show that commitment by the time they come to OLA. But what we do have is our workshops, auditioning workshop, how to audition for the camera, how to audition for a casting director. What is it the casting director looks for? You have to have a basic technique under all of that before we're able to fine-tune. But our most successful workshop has been our voiceover, Spanish language voiceover workshop. This past year, we were donated with something called a whisper room, which is an enclosed box affair, fairly large room with a door, well padded, with electrical outlets and for air conditioning and circulation of air, and room to put a microphone and the lines connected to a recorder. And it was donated totally free of charge to us, and we've been using that to work our voiceover workshops, and it's been quite successful. Prior to the donation of the whisper room, we were going to a private studio, which was very costly, and the workshops, you had to charge almost $400, because you had to pay for the studio. And
for the time.
For the time, and you also had to pay for the technician to be there to run the equipment as your director runs the workshop itself. So each actor had to pay close to $400, for a six-week or six-session workshop, which lasted 3 hours. It was intense, and it wasn't that expensive when compared to other workshops in the commercial field, but still prohibitive for our folks because they're coming in for the first time into this business, and we had to find a way of getting it at the most reasonable cost. And then luck, as it happened, we wanted one, and we were offered a whisper room. This is a man who was moving from his location. He was moving to smaller studios, and he could not use the whisper room anymore. And he took it apart, and we had it picked up, and when it got there, we put it together. Four walls, ceiling, everything, padding. It took us about 4 hours to get it together, but it was like an erector set. It was a lot of fun. And now we've had very successful workshops, because now we don't have to pay for the studio space.
And that's wonderful. That is wonderful.
We get it under $200, maybe $220, and for a six-week course, very cheap. And it's conducted by Manuel Herrera, who is a wonderful, wonderful director, who knows voices, who actually runs the Spanish Department of Recorded Books, which is a service that records the printed matter and books, which then distributed to areas of the world where they need to hear the recorded books. And he conducts the workshop, the voiceover workshop, and at a rather reasonable fee. And we're very lucky to have him. But we're the only kind of group in the city of New York that does what we do. In fact, we're the only type of organization that is full service in the entire nation. That means that since Nosotros is not as active as it used to be, we now can claim that. Hopefully they'll be able to build up the services again, and then we'll say we're only the group like ourselves in the East Coast.
I had no idea that they had slowed down so.
Yeah, it's hard. I don't want to be critical or say
No,
anything.
No, we're not. We're just observing. We're not being critical at all.
Evidently, they purchased a theater there, and they got it deep into debt, and they've had to use all their resources to pull themselves out of debt, and
I didn't realize
they're not
that.
As active, but it's a fully equipped theater, so it's a valuable property. I imagine they'll pull themselves out of this situation, and then end up being successful again. Ricardo Montalban is someone who is highly respected. He's getting on in years, and I'm sure that he'll find a solution for them, help somewhere along the line. anyone there listening to this blog radio can go to nosotros.org and try to contact them and see maybe you can help.
Oh, absolutely. We would. That's something that's, well, that's important. We want to help all organizations that are established and all the new ones. I wanted to ask you, I came across the comedian, Luis, what was it, Leguizamo?
John Leguizamo.
John Leguizamo. And I was noticing, I mean, the comedy was terrific. John Leguizamo's
He was
movies.
An honor member at one time.
Was he really?
Oh, yeah. He's one of
he had mentioned stories. That he had mentioned that he was a member of OLA, and that's why the only reason I brought him up.
Yes, he was a member of OLA, and is one of his early theatrical efforts. We produced when we were doing showcases back in 1989 and 1990. And the title, it was a strange, crazy title of a play. When she first met her, when he first met his mother on the subway.
Uh huh.
It's a play on that situation. But it's an excellent it was an excellent show, and we was quite successful, and we had crowded we filled our seats almost every performance. It's the first time I ever experienced that, because when you're doing showcases, sometimes in order to have an audience, and this is the unfortunate reality of theater nowadays, when you're doing especially in showcases, you try to put an audience in there so the actors can play to an audience. Can you imagine playing to an empty house? You know, nobody wants to do that. But that's, he got started with us. Jimmy Smith, very early in his career, started with us. Also, Elizabeth Peña, the actress Elizabeth Peña. These are the ones that made names of themselves. But
Where is Louis Smith? What's he doing now? I don't have no idea.
Jimmy Smith, I don't know what it is. He's probably looking for his next project. He had that show, Kane, on television, which I loved to death. I said, finally, a full cast of Latinos, fascinating production values, storyline that just kept you riveted to what was going to happen the next episode.
I loved it. Week to week, what happened to that show?
Well, the writers went on strike, so they couldn't get new material, and the writers were on strike for several months, and the show eventually had to be canceled. They didn't. They were afraid that it lost its audience, that if they brought back a new episode, they would have to start all over again. So that created a problem for them, and so they cut their losses, unfortunately.
Oh, that was such a lovely program.
Well,
with Rita Moreno, I think, was the mother figure, wasn't she?
Yes. And she was getting, every character in each episode was featured more than the others, like most shows of that nature, like soap opera. If you watch a soap opera, you know that each character during the week gets a little more camera time and more storyline. And it was happening to her, so I was waiting to see what happened to her. The character, was she going to be the strength of the show? Was she going to be the mother that puts everybody under control, that stops all the shenanigans going on with creation of Kane? It's a lot of fun, Sugar Kane. I enjoyed it.
Oh, I love that program. It was wonderful. I had no idea that it had been affected by the strike, so.
Yeah, the writer's strike affected that. It's unfortunate that that Hollywood is now going through changes. Screen Actors Guild has not settled on a contract yet for the next 4 years or 3 years, and a lot of shows have shut down. Again, the independent features are being filmed, and they're going away from the States to shoot. But a lot of the studios are dark at this point until they're sure there won't be a Screen Actors Guild strike. If there is one, it's going to be nasty and long. It's unfortunate.
Do you think that it's going to be that long?
There's a lot of bad blood right now between the producers and the union. The producers do not want to share more of the DVD rentals. That's the money that they get from renting DVDs and sales. And the actors want a bigger cut of it, and they felt they were being cheated out, or they were cheated out at the beginning when DVDs started, and when negotiations went on then, and they want to get their money now. I can't blame them. Big stars suck a lot of the oxygen out of a movie budget. And the middle class actor has major problems surviving. There was a time in the 80s, before the 90s started, before something called salary compression. Am I boring you? I hope I'm not boring you.
No, this is very interesting. This is exactly why I wanted you to come and share this with us. I wanted to know about this. I don't know. We don't know the inside track. We don't know this information. We're very interested.
Established actors. We're not talking about big stars. We're talking about the actor that you recognize that does character work, that does a detective, or that comes on as a gardener and has a name. They had something called a quote that if they were going to be hired for a television film, they had a certain amount of minimum money that they will accept. Below that, they didn't want the job. If you wanted me as an actor and the audiences liked you and you were a favorable face, the producer had to pay this actor's quote. It was never something onerous, but it was a quote. And his residuals and his income after the show gets on the air and is shown again and again was based on the amount of money that you made, not a minimum, but a maximum amount of money you made. And that's how a residual income was made available to an actor so he can live comfortably as he gets older and the movies are shown on television over the subsequent years. There was something called salary compression. It actually started out with the Disney organization, where they said to an actor, I will give you scale, that's what your union negotiates at a minimum, plus 10% for your agent. Take it or leave it. And that spread right across all the producers, because actors started to take that money, because if not, they had no work. You know, you're always afraid, where's my next job? You're working today, but you're wondering what your next job is and where it's coming from. But anyway, salary compression started. Now it's become endemic throughout the entire system, and actors are not getting the kind of money they wish they need. They feel they deserve. They are well paid when they're working. The scale is a comfortable amount of money, but still, it's not the same if you have to maintain a house, a home, and always available for work. Because once you get into that series of concentric circles, where you're going out on a regular basis for work, auditioning, then getting a job here and a job there, that means that you're wanted, that people know you, they notice you, and they start bringing you in for more work and more work and more work. You go through several years of this kind of success, and then you drop out for a while, then you come back in, then sometimes you have to drop out altogether. You end up doing something else in the industry, usually voiceover work, and I don't blame them. But anyway, actors in Hollywood are going through this great problem. It's a one-horse town. It was a one-industry town. There isn't anything else that you can do and still be call yourself an actor. So this is a big problem. And the industry and the union has to get together and decide how much you're going to want to repay the actor for his work. And I can't blame the actors. You know, you spend 20, 30 years making a name for yourself, working, 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 and all of a sudden the bottom is pulled out and you drop down simply because the industry says, I'm not going to pay you anymore. I'm not going to pay you what you're worth, but I can pay myself as a producer lots of bucks. I feel a little resentful of them for doing that, but that's what happens in the industry.
That's where the bad blood comes in.
Yes, that's where the bad luck. So we're going through this big problem out in Los Angeles. It doesn't affect New York so much, because New York is more commercial. There's television shows, of course, and we're very interested in making sure that Law and Order pays us in some of the series that begin to shoot. But these shows in New York normally pay scale. They really don't pay much of a quote, though they will pay more for a name actor.
We're not actors, so we don't know. What is scale exactly? How much is that? Everyone wants to know. When an actor says, or when people on television or radio mention the expression, they're paying scale. We don't know what that is. What is scale today? How much is scale?
You're working, under 3 days a week, somewhere around $700 or $800 a day, if you've got a speaking role. But if you start working more than that, then it becomes a weekly rate, which is somewhere around $2,000 and something for a week. That is scale. It's nice money if you're working 52 weeks out of the year. It isn't so nice money if you're working only 3 or 4 times a year. That's the big problem.
So we've got to get these actors working is what we've got to do.
Well, yes, you have to have more production going and more television shows so actors can work. More films so people can go to the theater and see them. Movie theater, anyway. Theater is something else.
Now, another thing I wanted to ask you, because people have asked me this, and they asked me to ask you, people who are interested in acting at all, young, very young people, they wanted to know, when you walk across the room and you don't say a word, what do they pay people to do that? Because I've seen actors, and all they do is walk across the room or pick up a book, a phone book, and walk to the corner, and what do they get paid for that?
Is that all that you're talking about, this all the scene?
In a movie, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. They have nothing else to do. They don't come up and speak to the principal actor. They don't act.
No.
They don't interact with the main storyline. They're just background fillers, what you're saying.
Exactly. They walk from this side of the room, pick up a phone book, go to that side of the room.
That is a background actor.
A background actor, I see.
Not an extra. They're called background actors. And they get on a union shoot. They get a minimum, I think the rate is about $125 a day for the first 8 hours. Then you go into time and a half and then double time. But shoots are long. Somebody comes into location in New York City and they have a street. That's all. They have it for one day. So an actor may be there for 12 or 13 hours.
Oh, my goodness. Just to work that first 8 hours. They may be waiting and waiting.
That's right. They may be waiting, and if they work the first 8 hours, that's fine. They may bring him back again to do another cross in the back. For the most part, you don't recognize anyone in the background. You're not supposed to recognize anyone. So an actor can change his coat, put on a hat, and do a cross across the street. Just cross along as if he were a pedestrian crossing the street, and you don't notice him. It becomes a blur in the background. He's still available all day to do that kind of work.
Manny, what about a person who's walking through the room and they have to say something like, oh, it's 2
that's
o'clock.
That's principal.
Okay.
That's
this principal. Person that says it's 2 o'clock, that's all they say. It's 2 o'clock.
It's the principal work. If he is scripted to say it's 2 o'clock, it's principal work, and he gets that $800 or $700. I forget what the rate is. I don't have the rate book with me. But he gets that.
We're taking notes because we were asked those questions, so it is something that people are interested in. And I remember when I was in Las Vegas once, they were filming something at the Bellagio, and they put up a sign saying, anyone who walks through this hallway while we're filming, by virtue of walking through this hallway, agrees to be in the film. And you could see people get right to, to that area, see the sign and go left. And they didn't want to come out, they didn't want to be filmed on camera. Possibly have to explain later what they were doing in Vegas.
Yes. Well, I think it's more the movie company protecting itself if someone might sue them later on. I was filmed without my permission. So the sign is posted to protect the movie company. You cross this area here, you're in danger of being photographed. But anyway, it's a business that has many facets, I used to work background years ago when I first started in New York. I got my Screen Actors Guild card. My first commercial was a McDonald's.
Oh, my gosh. This is Black Talk Radio, syndicated news. We're talking with Manny Alfaro. Manny, we'll be back in 1 second. We're just going to let everybody know where we are and what we're doing.
Good enough.
Just want to make sure we take a moment to mention Shadow Ops. Shadow Operations, LLC, out of San Jose, California. Their website says, don't remain in the shadows when it comes to your network operations. Shadow Operations has been providing network and IT services to customers large and small since 1998. Shadow Operations is a California-based company that provides secure, reliable, and cost-efficient network and information technology. They provide project management solutions enabling small and mid-sized customers to achieve core business goals. That's Shadow Ops in San Jose, California. Yes, they're in the book. And we thank them. They are our sponsor, and they are keeping syndicated news in place with their sponsorship. We thank them, as always, for their tremendous generosity. That's Shadow Ops in San Jose, California. Shadow Ops. Now, go on, tell us. You in New York City, we want to hear this. You just got there, you just got your after card, and then what?
My SAG card.
Uh-huh, your SAG card. Uh-huh.
I had photographs taken by my cousin. You know, I said, I'm not going to spend $100 to have my photographs taken. At that time, it was $100, $60. I thought it was a lot of money. My cousin took a picture of me. It looked good. I had them reproduced, and I mailed them out. And I got called in by a small advertising company who were beginning at the time doing Spanish language commercials. And,
excellent.
Oh, yeah, well, this was a fun thing about it. It was a Big Mac attack. Years ago, they had a And I was
the Mac Attack commercial. You did that?
Oh yeah, yep. In Spanish, I was one. There were three people three principals in the commercial, and then a few background actors. And I would be shaving in my mirror. It opened up in my bathroom, shaving in the morning, ready to go out. And then I got a Big Mac Attack, and I would run to the nearest Macintosh. Oh my, that's an Apple, McDonald's restaurant. And order them Big Mac. And so I was running around in the streets and in the McDonald's restaurant with my robe on and my slippers. It was kind of a corny commercial, but it was my first break. It was a Big Mac attack. I said it to the camera in Spanish, Tengo un ataque de hambre. Boom. And I was online, ready to order my McDonald's. That was my first break. I made a few $1,000 on the commercial, and I started to look for more work. I was able to afford better pictures, and little by little, I got work here, a little bit of work there, lots of showcases, many showcases. And the last film I appeared in, I haven't done any film work in quite a while, was The Basketball Diaries, where I beat up this young Italian actor. I think he's very famous nowadays. Not beat him up, I rough him up. I can't think of his name. But he was in this film, Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
You know who I'm talking about? I'm sure someone listening can remember him. Lovely Italian last name, little blonde boy. He's a big actor nowadays. But I'm not going to dwell on this anymore. But anyway, that was my first, that was my last appearance in the film. Speaking role, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Since then, I've been working as executive director of Ola, and I've done a series of voiceover work, commercial work.
You're not getting away that easily. You were the doorman in Sea of Love.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's a mistake.
Tell us about that, because we see that, and your name is there. Tell us what happened. How was that a typo? How is it a mistake? Tell us.
Well, there were two doormans in the film.
Uh-huh.
And I was hired to do the New York shoot of a doorman in the building. That should have been listed as a separate doorman. The real doorman who had the role in the film, though I had a role, was not listed. They made a mistake. So I'm in Sea of Love, and I get the only credit for the doorman.
How awful. How unfair.
It's so unfair to the other actor, but he's getting all the money. I haven't mm-hmm. seen any residuals. Kind of tiny little bit of money because I only worked one day.
Oh.
Al Pacino.
Geez.
I had a Al Pacino was a star, and so I had my lines, and so I was ready to say the lines as Al Pacino walks in. He's playing a detective. He says, and he puts his hand up, and he stops shooting for a moment. He walks over and talks to me, and then he gives him the clearance to shoot again. So I go
what
out.
What did he say to you? Wait.
I want you to say the line. This line, not the line that's scripted. So I say the line that Al Pacino says to me, and the director yells, cut! Cut! No! The line is this. So I'm looking at Al Pacino, hoping that he'll save me from this embarrassment. He just doesn't say anything, goes back into his little corner, ready to make his entrance. So we start up the line up the shot again, and I'm about to wait for action. Pacino comes out and he says to me, no, now I want you to say the line that way. Finally, the third time, he comes up and fesses. I've been telling him to say the line differently, and it was a big joke. So we finished the scene, and I didn't appear in the movie. I felt so crestfallen. No, you end up on the cutting floor on a lot of these films. You know, for time, they cut you out.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a lot of fun.
Now, what did you do in Goodfellas?
I was the gambling den doorman and the driver. And I'm the fellow that gets the $50 bill in the jacket when he comes when De Niro comes in and gives me the tip. And I'm the gambling, I'm also the driver. When they put the pizza man and the postman into the pizza oven, I'm the fellow that drives them to the oven.
Oh.
It's all at the very beginning of the film.
Uh-huh.
I was much younger, thinner, and I was wearing a mustache.
Oh, we're going to go watch that. We're going to watch it just to see you.
First 15 minutes, let me tell you something. That was really a big, big movie, the way they produced it. Everybody worked together. There was never any problems on the set. Everyone knew the lines. They went in there and got it done. But I had a good 3 weeks in that movie, 3 weeks as a principal. And the residuals have been rather nice. They've kept me going for over the years. Not enough to survive on, but certainly enough to supplement your income on.
That's wonderful. I'm very happy about that. So that takes care of that movie. And what else have you been doing? I mean, the Law and Order, that episode. Which one did you do?
I don't remember the episode name, but I discover a dead
Carlos?
Body.
Was it Carlos?
No, the episode had a different name.
What was your role?
The role I was the concierge in the hotel.
Ah.
And I discover the body of this woman when the detectives come in. And I have one line where I say out loud, "Ay, Dios mio!" And everyone says, "What?" Yeah, I get from my family around the country, I would get an email saying, "Ay, Dios mio!" And I know that show ran in that cable system, so I'm going to expect some money soon. Lo and behold, you get a second
email. I'll be looking out for it now. We have reruns of all the Law and Orders in the
They're
state
very
of
well done.
Well.
I have to praise my fellow actors. Everybody's concentrated. They do the number. They get in there, get the lines down, say their lines. There's very few reshoots. They go to the next setup. That show has successive. It's known for having many setups and not that expensive to produce anymore. And I remember I was doing background work in the very first Law and Order they shot.
Yeah.
They shot it on super 16mm, and they had the camera on a gimbal. They strapped the camera on a gimbal that floated, and that was the deal. That gave it the cinema verite style. But then the next season, they stopped doing that. They went to 35mm and shot. I'm very interested in things technical. It's a lot of fun.
You're interested in the background, huh?
I'm interested in things technical. Mm-hmm. So whenever I'm on the set, I'm always looking at the camera, see how what advancements they've had, what are they doing nowadays than they did a year or so ago, the last time I worked on a film. It's a lot of fun.
In any case, any of you who've just joined us, we are here at Blog Talk Radio, Syndicated News, talking to Manny Alfaro. He's the executive director of the Hispanic Organization of Latin Actors in New York City, known as HOLA, H-O-L-A. It's located at 107 Suffolk Street, Suite 302, New York, New York, 10002. Their phone number is 212-253-1015. Their website is located at www.hellohola.org. And you want that information because they're going to be having the awards ceremony September 15th, did you say?
Yes, I did.
September 15th, and they have tickets available on their website. And they're going to have a tapas on, I guess it's going to be, is that going to be before or after?
Before. Tapas, wine, hot tapas, different variety of them. We have a Spanish caterer that helps us out along those lines, and it's not bad. I always manage to eat more than I really need to eat on those nights. I'm running around nervous. I burned all it off, by the way. But anyway, it's an effort to recognize those actors that have accomplished, that have broken through the stereotype, and also to recognize those actors that are coming up in the business and they need a little ego massage on the part of their peers. And it's wonderful. Everyone is excited. They love it. They know they're going to get an award. They go there. And hopefully they all buy their tickets. That's the effort to do it as a fundraiser at the same time.
And the tickets can be purchased on the website.
Yes, they're $90.
That's www.hellohola.org. Why am I letting you know about that website repeatedly, and when I know so many of you are not in New York City, is because it doesn't matter. If you want to contribute to this 501c3, this is a very seriously registered public 501c3. It's a nonprofit, and if you want to buy tickets, and maybe you're not in New York City, and maybe you're not going to attend the event, but you want to go just to support them financially, buy a ticket.
Well, you can also
if you can't go. It's also helpful to contribute. Can they contribute if someone would like to donate on your site?
They can go to the Friends of Ola, F-O-H. It's a program we have, Friends of Ola, and you become a friend by donating. There isn't any restricted amounts. You can donate any amount that you wish. It's online. It's very simple. And we let you let us know when you donate, that the process, the procedure, the New York Charities Bureau does it for us. And if you have an email, hopefully. Of course, you have to have email to get online. And then we'll send you back a thank you and list you as one of our friends. It's completely tax deductible to the fullest extent of the law, naturally, depending upon your income and what kind of setup that you have. And we appreciate all the support we can get. We'd like to be around another 30 years. We've been around since 1975, and we want to be able to be of service. It's a lot of fun. It's gratifying to be of service, and not enough people do it in this world. But those that do know what it feels like. But we need the support from people out there, from corporations and from foundations, those that are interested in helping out. We're a legitimate organization. No one goes to Acapulco on anyone's fees. We're there. And if we weren't there...
It's a wonderful organization.
I think so. I certainly do. I'm the longest-serving executive director, so... no one has taken.
How long have you been the executive director of Ola? How long?
1993.
Wow.
1993. So I've been around for a while.
So then the organization has good stability.
Yes, it does. We're liked by our funders, those that do fund us, the New York State Council on the Arts and the City of New York Department of Cultural Affairs, and those Univision and Telemundo, who support us every year during our foundation, during our award ceremony. They know that we're a reliable organization, and they help fund us. But that support is never enough. We have to grow with the times, and people have to be paid salaries. I have to be paid a salary. The services, the rent, the computers, the telephones, everything else costs money. It isn't there for nothing, and we need the support, and it all goes to that. Nothing is put away. No monies are put there, put in escrow or anything like that. We use it just for services, and we need to do it on a regular basis. We need to raise money continually, and that's the nature of a nonprofit. The executive is always 30, 40, 50% of his time raising money, and then the rest of the time is applied to services. I wish it weren't that way. But unfortunately, that's the way it goes.
And like any good organization, I mean, you've shown stability. This is a proven organization that's lasted a long time. When all the similar organizations have faltered, Ola has been there year after year, steadfast. Shows good leadership, don't you think?
Well, I don't like to scratch my own back. No,
Manny,
what?
Scratching.
Oh.
I'm scratching. I'm saying something that's factual. I'm not trying to flatter you. It's something that's factual. I see the organizations come and go. They're around for 4 or 5 years, and then they kind of falter. But I think that if an organization has good leadership and constancy, I think it can take on good direction, and it can actually grow and develop. I do think that the rumors are true, and I do think that you will be expanding to California. I believe that. I don't think it's rumor anymore now that I've spoken to you.
No.
I think that it's something that's in the works, and maybe not today.
That's our intent. Not today. That's our intent. If you don't intend, if you don't have the idea, if you don't make that effort to do it, it'll never happen. If it stays in the back of your head, no one's going to know that you want to do that.
I think that you, I see you running an Ola in New York and an Ola in Hollywood. I see that happening.
Also, we're getting requests for Miami. Miami, Florida.
Oh, tell me.
Yeah, it's a right-to-work state. So consequently, mm-hmm. the there is less cohesion when it comes to union work than there is in Los Angeles or New York. New York State is not a right-to-work state, nor is California. But Miami is, or that is, Florida is a right-to-work state. And so you have to, actors need more of leadership down there, more, a greater reason to be affiliated with an organization. And there are a lot of them down there, and if I can find a way of getting them to be part of our directory and of our group, then we have a reason to open up a chapter down there and find someone and change our mission statement and our bylaws to include chapters around the country.
Manny, I'm wondering. I remember that recently we had a wonderful guest on the show, Bill Gatto. Do you remember? Bill Gatto, he set up the Hispanic Digital Network.
Bill Gatto.
Yeah.
No, I'm not familiar with him. Go ahead. Don't tell him I'm not familiar with him. I'm going to make myself familiar with him when I get to the office.
It's too late. You said it on the air. I couldn't stop you. But I want you to meet him. In fact, I'm going to exchange emails with both of you so that you can talk to each other, because he brought on all of those Spanish language radio stations onto the internet, you know, building them websites and getting them online. And his company is called the Hispanic Digital Network. Great organization.
Well,
and I think you two should talk to one another. I think it would be a wonderful thing, because you both have very, very similar interests.
Well, go ahead.
He's doing a lot of Spanish language programming and things of that nature, and I'm sure he can use all your talent that's in your book.
Then we must make the connection. Is he a for-profit entity or a non-profit group?
Oh, yeah. For profit, he's their corporation.
All right, then maybe we can find a way that we can complement each other's services.
Absolutely. His name is Bill Gatto, and he was here with us telling us about the Hispanic Digital Network, and it was a fantastic program. He's very interesting, and he worked at the Miami Herald for many years.
Wait a minute, maybe the name is familiar. Miami Herald. Does he have a website?
HDN has a website.
.com. HDN.com?
Let me get it for you. It's HDNweb.com, the Hispanic
HDNweb.com.
Digital Network.
All right.
Advertising Network Design Services. They set up all of these radio stations and all those Spanish language newspapers. They put them on the web. Wonderful job.
Good.
So anyway, I'm going to plug Hispanic Digital Network as well, and anyone that wants to do this type of work, and Manny Alfaro as well. For inquiries, the number is 305-971-7989. We've had a wonderful evening today with Manny Alfaro, and we're going to tell you that the number there at Ola is 212-253-1015. We've had a wonderful evening with Manny Alfaro. And Manny, I hope you come back again, because you've been a joy to spend some time with.
Well, I'm glad to have been with you. It's been a pleasure on my part. I didn't think I could last an hour and a half or close to that. have enough information.
Of course you can. Ola is very interesting. Ola, you have a lot to say about Ola. It's important. Anyway, we're going to sign off. This has been Blog Talk Radio, syndicated news. We've spent the evening with Manny Alfaro, and we hope you come again, Manny. It's been a pleasure to spend the evening with you.
Gracias, corazón.
Gracias, y que espero que vuelvas.
Supongo que sí, con mucho gusto.
Espero que vuelvas y estés aquí con nosotros.
I sincerely hope so. Thank you.
Good night.